Please take your seat so we can get started.
A pathway is the series of nervous structures utilized in the transmission of an item of information. An example of a pathway is the reflex arc we previously discussed. The brain stem is continuous with the spinal cord. Together, the brain stem and the spinal cord are sometimes known as the neuraxis. A sensory pathway is a series of nervous structures used to transmit information from the body to the central nervous system. On arrival in the central nervous system, these pathways ascend or go up the neuraxis to the brain. A motor pathway is a series of nervous structures used to transmit information from the central nervous system to the body. The commands for motor action originate in the brain and descend or go down the neuroaxis to the appropriate spinal levels. From this point, the commands pass through the nerves to the effector organs. The human nervous system has several levels for control. The lowest level is the simple reflex arc. The highest level of control is the conscious level. From the lowest to the highest levels are several progressively higher levels, such as the writing reflex. Thus, the processing of information and the transmission of commands are not haphazard, but very carefully monitored and controlled. All information input and all information output are monitored and evaluated. Motor pathways begin in the brain. They descend the neuraxis in bundles of a number of specific neuron processes called motor fiber tracts. Commands originating in the right half of the brain leave the central nervous system through peripheral nerves on the left side. Commands from the left half of the brain leave the central nervous system on the right side. Therefore, the right half of the brain controls the left side of the body, and the left half of the brain controls the right side of the body. For example, the actions of the right hand are controlled by the left half of the brain. In those people who are right-handed, we refer to the left half of the brain as being dominant. A pyramidal motor pathway is primarily concerned with volitional or voluntary control of the body parts, in particular the fine movements of the hands. Because control is volitional, the pathways can be used for neurological screening and testing. These pathways are called pyramidal because their neuron processes contribute to the makeup of a pair of structures in the base of the brain known as the pyramids. An extrapyramidal pathway is primarily concerned with autonomic or non-volitional control of body parts for purposes of coordination. Extrapyramidal pathways use many intermediate relays before reaching the effector organs. The cerebellum of the brain plays a major role in the extrapyramidal pathways. The cerebellum helps to integrate patterned movements of the body. The body is continuously bombarded by types of information called stimuli. Those few stimuli which are consciously perceived in the cerebral hemispheres are called sensations. Those stimuli received throughout the body are called the general senses. Stimuli received by only single pairs of organs in the head, for example, the eyes, are called special senses. Examples of these would be smell and taste. The general senses in humans include pain, temperature, both warm and cold, touch, both light and deep, and proprioception, in other words, body sense, posture, tone, and tension. The special senses in humans include smell, also called olfaction, taste, also called gustation, vision, hearing, and equilibrium. The input from each special sensory receptor goes to its own specific area of the opposite cerebral hemisphere. The general sensory pathway is from the receptor organ via the peripheral nervous system nerves to the central nervous system. This general pathway then ascends fiber tracts in the neuraxis. The pathway ends in the central area of the cerebral hemisphere on the side opposite of the input. Molecules of various materials are dispersed or spread throughout the air we breathe. A special olfactory epithelium is located in the upper recesses of the nasal chambers in the head. Special hair cells in the olfactory epithelium are called chemoreceptors because they receive these molecules in the air. The information received by the olfactory hair cells is transmitted by way of the olfactory nerves, cranial nerves 1. It passes through these nerves to the olfactory bulbs and then into the opposite cerebral hemisphere. Here, the information becomes the sensation of smell. Molecules of various materials are also dispersed or dissolved in fluids or saliva of the mouth. These molecules are from the food ingested or taken in. Organs known as taste buds are scattered over the tongue and in the rear of the mouth. Special hair cells in the taste buds are chemoreceptors to react to these molecules. The information received by the hair cells of the taste buds is transmitted to the opposite side of the brain by way of 3 cranial nerves, 7, 9, and 10. This information is interpreted by the cerebral hemispheres as the sensation of taste. Rays of light stimulate the receptor tissues of the eyeballs to produce the special sensation of vision. This includes both the sensation of vision or seeing and a variety of reactions known as the light reflexes. The actual reception of the light energy is a chemical reaction which in turn stimulates neuron endings. To appreciate the functioning of the eyes, some simple principles of optical physics have to be understood. By means of a lens system, light rays are bent and brought to the focal point for acute vision. This process is referred to as focusing. The focal length is the distance from the focal point to the center of the lens. The amount of bending or focusing depends upon the exact curvature of the lens system. The eyeball is the special sense organ which contains the receptor tissues. The eyeball is suspended in the orbit. The orbit is a skeletal socket of the skull, which helps protect the eyeball. Various structures associated with the functioning of the eyeball are called the adnexa. The adnexa include the eyelids and the lacrimal system. In the main, the eyeball is a spherical, bulb-like structure. Its anterior surface, transparent and more curved, is known as the cornea of the eyeball. The eyeball is a hollow structure. Its wall is made up of 3 layers known as coats or tunics. The outermost layer is white and very dense fibrous connective tissue. It's known as the sclera, scleral coat, or fibrous tunic. Its anterior portion is called the cornea. I already mentioned that the cornea is transparent and more curved than the rest of the sclera. The fixed curvature of the cornea enables it to serve as the major focusing device for the eyeball. The middle layer of the wall of the eyeball is known as the choroid coat, or the vascular tunic. This layer is richly supplied with blood vessels. It's also pigmented with a black material. The black color absorbs light rays and prevents them from reflecting at random. The inner layer of the wall of the eyeball is known as the retina, retinal coat, or internal tunic. The actual photoreceptor elements are located in the retina at the back and sides of the eyeball. These elements are the rods and cones. They constitute the nervous portion of the retina. In the anterior part of the eyeball, the retina continues as a non-nervous portion. The photoreceptors of the nervous portion of the retina contain chemicals known as visual pigments, or rhodopsin. The cones are more concentrated in the center at the back of the eyeball. The cones can register colors and are used for acute vision. However, cones require more intense light than do rods. The rods are distributed more toward the side of the nervous retina. Although the rods are capable of registering less intense light, rods perceive only black and white. If you look directly at an object, light from the object will fall in a small depression of the retina called the fovea centralis. The fovea centralis is at the posterior end of the eyeball, exactly opposite the centers of the cornea, pupil, and lens. The fovea centralis is found in a small yellow area of the retina called the macula lutea. The macula lutea is the area of the retina where vision is the sharpest. Fovea means small depression, centralis means center, macula means spot, and lutea means yellow. Associated with the rods and cones are the beginnings of neurons of the optic nerve. These neurons pass out of the eyeball at the posterior end in a point medial and superior to the fovea centralis. At the point of exit, there are no rods or cones. Therefore, it's called the blind spot or the optic disc. The anterior end of the choroid layer thickens to form a circular picture frame around the lens of the eyeball. This is also near the margin of the base of the cornea. The frame-like structure is called the ciliary body. It includes mostly radial muscle fibers, which form the ciliary muscle. The lens is suspended in place by ligaments, or fibers of the ciliary zonule. These ligaments connect the margin, or the equator, of the lens with the ciliary body. The lens is located in the center of the anterior of the eyeball, just behind the cornea. The lens is biconvex. This means that it has 2 outwardly curved surfaces. The anterior surface is flatter or less curved than the posterior surface. The lens is transparent and elastic. As one grows older, the lens becomes less and less elastic. The ligaments maintain a tension upon the lens. This tension keeps the lens flatter and allows the lens to focus on distant objects. When the ciliary muscle contracts, the tension on the lens is decreased. The decreased tension allows the lens to thicken. The greater thickness increases the anterior curvature and allows close objects to be seen clearly. The process of focusing the lens for viewing close objects clearly is called accommodation. The process of accommodation is accompanied by a reduction in the pupil size as well as convergence of the two central lines of sight, or the axes of the eyeball. Another structure formed from the anterior portion of the choroid layer is the iris. The iris is located between the lens and the cornea. The pupil is the hole in the middle of the iris. The size of the pupil is controlled by the radial and circular muscles of the iris. The radial muscles are dilators. The circular muscles are constrictors. By changing the size of the pupil, the iris controls the amount of light entering the eyeball. The iris may have many different colors. The actual color is determined by multiple genes. The space between the cornea and the lens is called the anterior cavity. The space between the cornea and the iris is called the anterior chamber. The space between the iris and the lens is called the posterior chamber. Both chambers of the anterior cavity are filled with a fluid called the aqueous humor. The aqueous humor is secreted into the chambers by the ciliary body. It drains into the encircling canal of Schlemm, located at the angle between the cornea and the iris. This angle is called the iridiocornealis angle. Behind the lens is a jelly-like material called the vitreous. The orbit is the cavity in the upper facial skull which contains the eyeball and its adnexa. The orbit is open anteriorly. The floor of the orbit is generally horizontal. Its medial wall is generally vertical and straight from front to back. Since the lateral wall and roof converge to the rear, the orbit is a cone-like cavity. In the facial skull, the orbit is surrounded by a number of specific spaces. Superiorly, the roof of the orbit is also the floor of the anterior cranial cavity, where the frontal portion of the brain is. Just medial to the medial wall are the structures of the nasal chamber. Inferiorly, the floor of the orbit is also the roof of the maxillary sinus. Laterally, the wall of the orbit is the inner wall of the temporal fossa, a depression on each side of the skull where a fan-shaped chewing muscle, or temporalis muscle, is attached. The adnexa are the various structures associated with the eyeball. Among the adnexa are the extrinsic ocular muscles, which move the eyeball within the orbit. Each eyeball has associated with it six muscles made up of striated muscle fibers. Four of these muscles are straight from the rear of the orbit into the eyeball. They are therefore known as the recti muscles. Rectus means straight. Each name indicates the position of the muscles in relationship to the eyeball. For example, lateralis rectus muscle means on the outer side. Superior rectus muscle means above. Medial rectus muscle means on the inner side. And inferior rectus muscle means below. In addition, there are two muscles that approach the eyeball from the medial side and are known as the superior oblique and inferior oblique muscles. Attached to the margins of the orbit in front of the eyeball are the upper and lower eyelids. These are called palpebrae in Latin or blepharon in Greek. These have muscles for opening and closing the eyelids. The eyelashes, or cilia, are special hairs of the eyelids which help protect the eyeball. The margins of the eyelids have special oil to prevent the loss of fluids from the area. The inner lining of the eyelids is continuous with the conjunctiva, a membrane over the anterior surface of the eyeball. The conjunctiva must be kept moist and clean at all times. To do this, a lacrimal apparatus is associated with the eyelids. In the upper outer corner of the orbit is a lacrimal gland which secretes a lacrimal fluid, or tears, into the junction between the upper eyelid and the conjunctiva. By the motion of the eyeball and the eyelids, or blinking, this fluid is moved across the surface of the conjunctiva to the medial inferior aspect. Here the lacrimal fluid is collected and delivered into the nasal chamber by the nasolacrimal duct. The eyebrow, or supercilium, is a special group of hairs just above the orbit. The eyebrow serves to keep rain and sweat away from the eyeball. Neurons carry information from the photoreceptors of the nervous retina. They leave the eyeball at the blind spot. At the optic nerve, or second cranial nerve, the neurons pass to the rear of the orbit. There, the optic nerve exits through the optic canal into the cranial cavity. Beneath the brain, The optic nerves from both sides join to form the optic chiasma, in which half of the neurons from each optic nerve cross to the opposite side. From the optic chiasma, right and left optic tracts proceed to the brain proper. The human ear serves two major special sensory functions, hearing and equilibrium. The stimulus for hearing is sound waves. The stimulus for equilibrium is gravitational forces. The sound stimulus is transmitted in a variety of ways. Regardless of the actual transmission method, the sound stimulus is unchanged. Sound may be transmitted as airborne waves, mechanical oscillations or vibrations, fluid-borne pressure pulses, or electrical impulses along the neurons to and in the brain. The human ear has three major parts. Each part serves a specific function in the transmission and reception of the sound stimulus. The three parts are known as the external or outer ear, the middle ear, and the internal or inner ear. The external ear begins on the outside of the head in the form of a funnel-shaped auricle called pinna. Actually serving as a funnel, the auricle directs airborne sound waves into the external auditory meatus. The external auditory meatus is a tubular canal extending into the temporal portion of the skull. At the inner end of the external auditory meatus is the tympanic membrane. The tympanic membrane, also called eardrum, is a circular membrane separating the external auditory meatus from the middle ear cavity. The tympanic membrane vibrates or mechanically oscillates in response to airborne sound waves. On the medial side of the tympanic membrane is the middle ear cavity. The middle ear cavity is a space within the temporal bone. The auditory ossicles are three very small bones which form a chain across the middle ear cavity. Ossicle means small bone. They join the tympanic membrane with the medial wall of the middle ear cavity. In order, the ossicles are named as malleus, incus, and stapes. The malleus is attached to the tympanic membrane. A sound stimulus is transmitted from the tympanic membrane to the medial wall of the middle ear cavity by way of the ossicles. The ossicles vibrate in response to the sound stimulus. The auditory tube or eustachian tube is a passage connecting the middle ear cavity with the nasal pharynx. The auditory tube maintains equal air pressure on the two sides of the tympanic membrane. The middle ear cavity is associated with other spaces in the skull. The thin roof of the middle ear cavity is the floor of part of the cranial cavity. The middle ear cavity is continuously posterior with the mastoid air cells via the antrum and upper posterior recess of the middle ear cavity. The bony labyrinth, or maze, is a complex cavity within the temporal bone. It has three semicircular canals, a vestibule, or hallway, and a snail-shaped cochlear portion. The membranous labyrinth is a hollow tubular structure suspended within the bony labyrinth. Endolymph is a fluid filling the space with the membranous labyrinth. The perilymph is a fluid filling the space between the membranous labyrinth and the bony labyrinth. These fluids are continuously formed and drained away. The cochlea is a spiral structure associated with hearing. It has 2.5 turns. Its outer boundaries are formed by the snail-shaped portion of the bony labyrinth. The central column or axis of the cochlea is called the modiolus. Extending from this central column is a spiral shelf of bone called the spiral lamina. A fibrous membrane called the basilar membrane or basilar lamina connects the spiral lamina with the outer bony wall of the cochlea. The basilar membrane forms the floor of the cochlear duct, the spiral portion of the membranous labyrinth. Within the cochlear duct, there is a structure on the basilar membrane called the organ of Corti. The organ of Corti has hairs, which are the sensory receptors for the special sense of hearing. Within the bony cochlea, the space above the cochlear duct is known as the scala vestibuli, and the space below is known as the scala tympani. Since the scalae are joined at their apex, they form a continuous channel, and the connection between them is called the helicotrema. Between the middle ear cavity and the scala vestibuli is an oval window called the fenestra vestibuli. It's filled with the footplate of the stapes. Between the middle ear cavity and the scala tympani is a round window called the fenestra cochlea. It's covered or closed by a membrane. The sound stimulus is transferred from the stapes to the perilymph of the scala vestibuli. Here the stimulus is transmitted as a pressure pulse in the fluid. In response, the basilar membranes of the cochlea vibrates or mechanically oscillates. Only selected portions of the basilar membrane vibrate at any one time, depending on the frequency of the sound stimulus. The hair cells of the organ of Corti at that particular location are mechanically stimulated. This stimulation is transferred to the neurons of the acoustic nerve, the cranial nerve 8A. The acoustic nerve passes out of the modiolus into the internal auditory meatus of the temporal bone. From here, it enters into the cranial cavity and goes to the brain. Posture is the specific alignment of the body parts at any given time. Humans can assume an infinite variety of postures. However, the truly erect posture is unique to humans. Equilibrium is the state of balance of the body. An erect standing human has a highly unstable equilibrium and therefore can easily fall. Through a variety of sensory inputs and postural reflexes, the body is maintained in its erect posture. The primary sensory input for equilibrium consists of gravitational forces. This input is received by the membranous labyrinth within the internal ear. The gravitational forces are of two types: static, when the body is standing still, and kinetic, when the body is moving in either linear or angular directions. The specific portions of the membranous labyrinth involved are the two sac-like structures, the sacculus and the utriculus. Each of these two structures has an area of special hair cells called the macula. In addition, there are three semicircular ducts located within the osseous semicircular canals of the temporal bone of the skull. Each semicircular duct has a crista, a little ridge of hair cells across the axis of the duct. All of the various sensory inputs related to the maintenance of equilibrium and posture are integrated within the brain as body sense. Correct information is sent to the muscles of the body by means of specific postural reflexes in order to maintain the proper posture. The sacculus and the utriculus are two sac-like portions of the membranous labyrinth. They're filled with endolymph. On the wall of each sac is a collection of special hair cells known as the macula, which serves as a receptor organ for static and linear kinetic gravitational forces. The sacular macula and the utricular macula are oriented at more or less right angles to each other. For the pair of maculae in the membranous labyrinth of the right side, there's a corresponding pair in the labyrinth on the left side. Information from all of these maculae is sent to the brain for continuous sensing of the position of the head in space. Extending from and opening into the utriculus are three hollow structures called the semicircular ducts. Since the utriculus completes the circle for each duct, the ducts act as if they were complete circles. Two of the ducts are vertically oriented, one anterior and one posterior. The third duct is essentially horizontal. The three ducts are all oriented at right angles to each other. In addition, the three ducts of one membranous labyrinth are matched or paired by the three ducts of the opposite membranous labyrinth. Each semicircular duct ends with an enlargement where it opens into the utriculus. This enlargement or swelling is called an ampulla. The crista is at a right angle to the axis of the duct. Movement of the endolymph within the duct, caused by movement of the head in space, deforms or bends the hairs of the crista in specific directions. These are responses to linear and/or angular kinetic gravitational forces. The vestibular nerve, cranial nerve 8, carries all this information from the macula and crista to the brain. The vestibular and auditory nerves are contained in the same fibrous sheath from the membranous labyrinth to the brain. Within the brain, the vestibular and auditory nerves separate into different pathways. The human nervous system can be thought of as a series of steps or levels. Each level is more complex than the level just below. No level is completely overpowered by upper levels, but each level is controlled or guided by the next upper level as it functions. The simplest and lowest level of control is the reflex arc. The reflex arc operates essentially on the level of the sensory input. Segmental reflexes produce a wider reaction to a stimulus than the reflex arc. For this purpose, the nervous system is organized more complexly. Thus, information spreads to a wider area of the central nervous system. We can observe a greater reaction to the stimulus. In the hind brain stem are to be found a number of nuclei, or collections of neuron cell bodies, which monitor and control the activities of the visceral functions of the body, such as respiration and heartbeat. And within the substance of the brain stem is a diffuse system called the reticular formation. Reticular means network. This reticular formation has a facilitatory or excitatory area and an inhibitory area. These areas monitor and control general body functions, including sleep. In the fore brainstem is a major collection of nuclei, all together called the thalamus. The thalamus is a primary relay for information going to and from the cerebrum and cerebellum. In the lowest animals, the thalamus represents the highest level of nervous control. The cerebellum has been greatly developed with many functional subdivisions. Altogether, it is one of the most important integrators of motor activity of the body. In humans, the highest level of nervous control is localized in the cerebrum. It's at this level that conscious sensation and volitional motor activity are localized. Even so, we can clearly designate three levels of control within the cerebrum: visceral, patterned, or volitional. The visceral or vegetative level is primarily concerned with visceral activities of the body as related to fight or flight, fear, and other emotions. The patterned or stereotype motor actions are activities of the bodies that are standardized and repetitive in nature. An example of a stereotype pattern of muscle activity would be the sequence of muscle actions involved in walking. The volitional level is the highest and newest level of control. Here, unique, brand new solutions can be created.